Succession number 27185, Reel 2.
Major Barrett, Reel 2. I think you were saying that when you were doing the company attack exercises with the 2nd Battalion, they were done on a much more professional basis.
Well, yes, because you were expected to be much more precise and to pay attention to what was going on, and of course the discipline was much much more stronger there.
But I was thinking more of the type of tactics used, whether you were using the
I just can't remember, quite honestly.
Movements.
I doubt it. I don't think that in the camps we got enough supervision, really, personal supervision, to know whether we were doing it rightly or wrongly. But we got the general impression and idea of an attack and how to do it. But I don't think individually we were probably taking the right, probably the right cover, or doing the right thing, or even section commanders and platoon commanders giving out the right orders. I mean, it was, as I say, it was amateur.
And company, I think you were saying company level was about the highest level you got to when you were doing training in 2nd Battalion.
Yes, I'm pretty sure of that. We used to go up in battalion marches, I remember, with the CO on his horse in those days and the adjutant on his horse. And then, of course, we had battalion parades on Saturday mornings with the band and drums and everybody out. That used to happen, again, with the CO on his horse. I think the 2nd in command had a horse as well. But that's as far as it went, apart from the adjutant.
What sort of distance would you cover on a battalion route march?
About 10 miles, I suppose. Not like the 25 milers we used to get later, or the... they were leisurely. I mean, not leisurely, but I mean, we were walking at 2.5 miles in the hours, was the 10-minute halts, as was always carried on for yonks, as far as I remember. But we used to, later, of course, during the war, we used to do these 10-mile marches and dig in, and supposed to do it in 2 hours or something like that. But these were just normal route marches in the countryside.
What about shooting? Were you able to do more shooting when you got to 2nd Battalion?
I don't remember. I remember shooting on the 2-2 range. I don't ever remember going out on a full bore. We may have done it on the 30. There was a 30-yard full bore range there. But, of course, the main ones out at Raynham, they used to be in Essex, where we used to go from school. I don't remember going back there again. I think it was just shortage of ammunition.
What sort of weapons did the battalion have when you joined them?
Well, when I joined... of course, they had the good old Lee Enfield rifle. The Lewis gun had just gone out, I think, with all its complications. The Bren gun had just come in. The 3-inch mortar was still there, and a very good weapon it was too, and it continued to be with us for the rest of the war. That was a First World War weapon. I mean, the Germans still maintained their 81mm, didn't they? It's a similar thing. You could fire off nine bombs a minute, I think, if you were very good at it. So we had those. I don't think we had the 2-inch mortar yet for the platoon. That came in later. I don't think we had medium machine guns either. The Bren gun had a tripod, which you could fire on fixed lines on, and you could also use it for anti-aircraft. There was an extra sort of arm. You put it up as a sort of tripod, and then this extra arm came up and vertically, and then you mounted the Bren gun on top of that, and then you, every other round in the magazine was a tracer, so you walked around like a maypole with this thing and hoped you could hose it onto an aeroplane.
What did the soldiers think of the Bren gun? Did they consider it an improvement on the Lewis?
Oh yeah. This is what I heard from the old soldiers who were there. The Lewis had so many stoppages, I think. Come to think of it, I think there were some medium machine guns there somehow, because they were water-cooled at that time.
Water jacket around the Vickers.
Yes. I remember people talking about it But I don't know whether we ever had a machine gun company or platoon. I don't think we did at that stage.
Well, there was a move at that time to create machine gun battalions.
Yes, right. The Manchesters, yes, among the two others.
Cheshires,
yes.
And we
had them. Later, we had anti-tank guns, but they were two-pounders and a pop gun. They were useless.
What about the boys' anti-tank rifle? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh, yes, I remember that. You really had to be sort of about 6 foot 10 and didn't mind having your face jaw broken every time you shot it. It really was an absolute brute. And I believe, although we never used it for against tanks, I don't believe we ever did, it had to get to a very it had to hit a very vulnerable part of the tank to get inside. So it wasn't a very good weapon. It was heavy and long and had to be carried around. The rounds were quite large too, so they had to be carried. And as I say, it had a kick like a mule.
Do you remember when you got that weapon?
I don't, actually. I don't know whether we had it in France with us in the BEF. Of course, it was replaced by the Piat after that, which was looked a bit amateurish, but was very effective.
You mentioned the two-pounder. Do you remember when you got those two-pounder anti-tank?
Yeah, I think we had them when we were in France. I really can't remember. Of course, they were replaced with six-pounders later on, which were more useful. But I think we had them in France. Yeah, two-pounders.
While you were at Second Battalion, I think the war broke out. Did the outbreak of war come as a surprise to you?
No, not really. We knew it was coming. I remember when Hitler walked into Czechoslovakia, I well remember one or two of us had been up to London and had come back quite late in the morning. Of course, Worley isn't, it's accessible to London, unfortunately, for one's pocket. And the lights were on all over the barracks, and the battalion had mobilised at that stage. Not that there wasn't general mobilisation, but the battalion was getting ready to go. And they got all the trucks loaded and all the stuff was being put in the trucks and everything. We had to stand by and we were on notice for, I can't remember what it was, it must have been 48 hours or something, to move.
Do you know where you were going to move to?
No, I can't remember, but
was it for a defence role of some sort?
I can't remember now. But we stayed like that for about two or three days and then stood down. So from that, as I said before, from that time onwards, there was no doubt in our minds that war was coming.
You mentioned that London, being close to London, was bad for your pocket. It's often said that being close to London can be bad for discipline in a unit. Did you have any disciplinary troubles with people?
No.
Getting into trouble?
Well, the obvious ones who occasionally got drunk, I suppose, and the absent without leaves. But it certainly wasn't endemic. I mean, it wasn't much of it. It hasn't stuck in my mind as being a problem at all.
What were the living conditions like for you and for your soldiers at that stage?
Well, the barracks at Worley at that time must have been, they were either built in William IV's time or early Victorian. They were certainly just about 100 years old, I suppose. They were sort of two-story buildings round a square. The barrack rooms themselves were long and beds were down either side. There was no sort of partitioning at all. At one end there was a sort of little room with a glass window in the wall to look out onto the barrack room where a corporal or NCO in charge of the barrack room slept. There was also a large fireplace, because everything was in coal in those days. There was no central heating. I mean, that fireplace any collector would give his back teeth for, I should think. But every barrack room had these big black fireplaces. And in our rooms, where the officers lived, we had a small fireplace, very sparse furnishing. I had a wardrobe, chest of drawers, bed, small mat, and that was about it. Or a table, a small table, and a chair. And there was, they were very sort of basic. If by any chance you didn't have very little in your room, then you qualified for what was called hard lying allowance. But they always made sure you had at least a poker in your room. So we used to call it hard luck allowance, actually. And of course, the senior officers used to live in the mess, over the mess, which was very well furnished, actually. That was all right. I mean, it was quite comfortable. But in the middle of the square was the cookhouse, I remember, which was built there on the old parade ground. And the new parade ground was outside the barrack walls. I mean, we had barrack walls in those days, with a big arch over the entrance with gates and that sort of thing, with a guard room. And at the guard room there was a large mirror, and every recruit or soldier who went out in his uniform had to satisfy himself and the provost sergeant or the guard sergeant who happened to be there that he was properly dressed before he was allowed out. And then the gymnasium was outside the walls as well. Then there was the married quarters across. They were all the same vintage.
Were there many married officers in the battalion?
There were some, actually. I mean, surprisingly enough, because the battalion had spent so long overseas, there were quite a lot of senior bachelors in the mess. I don't know, there was one there said used to say he'd hawked his body over all the hill stations of India without any luck. He eventually got married, but some of the others didn't. They were the sort of backbone of the regiment, I suppose. They'd been with the regiment all their lives. Many of them were happy to stay with the regiment. I mean, the brighter ones went off to Staff College and that sort of thing, and became colonels and brigadiers and whatnot. But there was a hardcore of chaps who were must have been in their 40s, I suppose. They were eccentric lot. I mean, having been up in the northwest frontier and spent a lot of their lives out there, and I mean, the troops loved them because I mean, they were a good entertainment value. But I mean, because there was of the long service in those days, and being together, the officers and the soldiers knew each other so much better, perhaps, than we were able to after the war. They'd served years together, many of them, and they knew each other so well.
I was going to ask you about these old soldiers, you know, whether you had long service men in your platoon.
Yeah.
And what sort of number of years they'd put in.
It's difficult to remember now. As I said, their commitment was 7 years initially.
But they could re-engage.
And then five on the reserve. Mm. Some of them went on for the 12. Mm. So, and then, of course, there was the 21 years. Now, most of the warrant officers, sergeants, and those sort of people had all signed up for the 21. And they were brilliant people, these chaps. I mean, they were really mature. I wouldn't call them veterans. Veterans, to my mind, are people who went off with Marlborough and went all over the continent or served with Wellington and the peninsula. But they were mature, seasoned soldiers, well disciplined. They were very loyal to their regiment, and they had a great sense of humour. Nothing bothered them. Nothing bothered them when we went to France when they were going towards Dunkirk. That's something later. But they were great chaps. You could always have a joke with them and have a laugh with them and that sort of thing.
Did things change dramatically after the outbreak of war?
Well, at some stage, I don't know whether it was just before the war or just after the declaration of war, we were packed off to the East End of London with our Bren guns and put on the top of tall buildings all the way from... I suppose some like Purfleet and right into the city. The whole battalion was stretched right across. And we had these Bren guns on tripods with
anti-aircraft mountings.
Anti-aircraft mountings with tracers. I suppose, I don't know what effect they'd have had on the Luftwaffe, quite honestly. I suppose if they flew low enough and slow enough, we might have hit one or two. But I think they were, as I say, everybody was worried about the bombing. And I don't think we had enough anti-aircraft regiments either mobilised or trained up for the job. So they put us in as a sort of short-term measure.
Had you done any training shooting at towed targets in the sky or anything to train with the Bren gun against aircraft?
No. I mean, the first few aircraft that came along would have got away with it, I suppose, after we'd used them as training targets. But that lasted for, I can't remember now, a few days, I think. But then leading up to the war, of course, general mobilisation came before the war started. And this is when all the reservists came to us. And there was also, of course, conscription, which didn't affect us. They went to the depot. At the same time as the TA army was doubled, so instead of having 4th Battalion, you had the 1st, 4th, 2nd, 4th, and so forth.
Did you, as regulars, have very much contact with the territorial battalions?
Not then, no. No, not at all.
Did you get conscripts coming through after they'd been to the depot?
No, we never saw any of them.
They didn't fill up your ranks?
No, the reservists filled up our ranks.
How did they take to being recalled to the colours?
Well, I think some of them were pretty browned off, to coin a phrase, when they first got there. A lot of them were just either about to get married. They got into a job, which I hoped they were going to stay in for the rest of their lives and so forth. One or two of them tended to play around a bit, I think, and the CO gave them some CB, I think, to start with. But it wasn't long before they all mucked in. It was just as if they'd never been away. And, of course, with the war coming on, they recognised that they were there for a purpose. They weren't just called up for fun. And I think after about 2 weeks, we had a splendid battalion. I mean, we were... The whole attitude changed. We became more mature with all these older chaps coming in who... There must have been most of them in their late 20s, early 30s. The strength of war establishment was about 750, I think, then. So we felt pretty good.
Did it lead to a more serious approach to training and to more extensive training?
I don't think we had much time for that. But general mobilisation took place, war was declared, and it was about 10 days before we left to go to France.
Do you remember how much mourning time you had?
I really can't remember. You've got to remember I was pretty low down the ladder in those days. Nobody consulted me about what was going on. I mean, the CO obviously knew, and the order room knew what had the mobilisation plans and so forth, knew when we were going and where we were going. But obviously it was secret, so we were never told.
But, I mean, usually if you're going overseas, you get a warning order, don't you? Perhaps embarkation. Maybe.
Oh, well, that must have come at some stage, yes. I mean, after war was declared, we all reckoned something was going to happen. We got leave. I remember we were sent off, I think it was 24 hours. It wasn't very long, may have been 48.
Did you have any expectations about what events were likely to occur once war had broken out?
I think we all thought we were going across to France. I'm not sure. I think we were expecting a different type of war to the First World War because we'd already seen the Germans in action in the Spanish War. We'd seen them in action in Poland by this time because they attacked Poland on the 1st of September, didn't they? And the actual Blitzkrieg with tanks and aircraft and so forth. We knew about. In fact, there was later we were shown a film called Baptism of Fire, I think it was called, which showed us exactly what the Germans did in Poland. But that came later. I don't think we thought we were all going to sit in trenches again. What we didn't know was that the rest of the army wasn't really geared up to fight the Germans. I'd never seen a tank. I didn't know what tanks we had, and I never saw one in the BEF. And as it turned out, whatever tanks we had, they only had 2-pounders on them as well. And their armour was about half the thickness of the German, the Mark IV anyway, which the Germans had with their 75mm gun, which was we had no match for. And our 2-pounders were no match either.
How did you get to France?
Well, first of all, I remember very well the parade. Our last supper was in the depot, I remember. We were all in our get ready to go. Of course, we're still in service dress in those days.
Hadn't got battle dress.
No, we were still what I call brass button dress. And we were all ready to go in the evening. And the depot mess offered us dinner across there, so we went across. We all went across there in a small, about 25 of us, only about half a dozen. We all sat round this table, all hugger-mugger. I think they had their mess kit on, and we were in sort of khaki. And we had our dinner there. And I always remember, just at the end of it, I was sitting next to a rather grizzled old quartermaster called Budge Ricketts, his name was, I remember, a captain. He'd been in the First War. And as we got up to go, he said, "It's all right, lad," he said, "you don't hear the ones that hit you." So that's the only bit of advice I got, actually, before I went. So after that, we went and lay down in the officer's mess on the floor for a few hours, kip. And then we were called out on parade about 2 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. We went on the parade ground, formed up, whole battalion. We were then addressed by the Lord Lieutenant of the county, Sir somebody Whitmore, I think his name was. And he gave us a sort of sending off address. I mean, he's a little bit pompous, he kept on calling us men of Essex, you know. But he meant well, and when he'd finished, he handed over to the CO, and the CO gave his orders for the march off.
How did the soldiers take the address from the Lord Lieutenant?
Oh, it was in complete silence. Well, they had to, they were all on parade. But the next thing that happened was the CO gave his orders out for move off and A Company leading Common Right and that sort of thing. And the A Company commander said, gave his orders. And then he said, "By the right," and the whole battalion shouted out, "Quick march." And off we went. Mm-hmm. Off we went down Worley Hill to the station at Brentwood. And there, all the locals came out to see us off. There were old ladies got out of bed with hair curlers and gentlemen in pyjamas. So there wasn't much secret about it. So when we got down to Brentwood Station, we entrained, and we went on safari around the countryside. It was a pretty gloomy sort of night. I mean, the blinds were down, and there were blue sort of lights inside, so it was not very inducive for fun. So we went round and eventually finished up in Southampton. And there we detrained, and the thing I remember is just standing in a hotel waiting for the orders to embark. We went across, I think in several ships, but they were using trans-channel ferries then.
Where did you land on the other side?
Cherbourg.
What, had you been to France before?
No.
That was your first...
My first trip abroad. Of course, most people hadn't been abroad in those days.
What was your first impression of France when you arrived?
Well, we got off the ship, we went to the march to the local station where we had to stay for some time. France then wasn't anything like it is today. I mean, nothing seemed to work very much. The trains were sort of a bit rickety. The telephone system was difficult to handle. The roads, of course, when we started marching on them, were absolute murder, because when we got up to northern France with these straight cobbled roads with poplar trees on either side, were an absolute nightmare. I thought they were still suffering from the First War, actually. I don't think they'd recovered from the First War by the look of things.
You said there was an old quartermaster in the depot who was a veteran of the First World War. Were there any First World War veterans in the battalion?
Oh, yes. The CO, who was now Colonel Blessed, who was Major Blessed in the depot. Most of the company commanders, the majors and senior captains, had been in the First World War. So they were... I looked upon them as sort of elderly gentlemen, I suppose, in those days when I was just 20. But of course, they must have been in their early 40s, I suppose.
It sounds like you were one of the youngest members of the battalion.
Yes, I was, yeah, because all the others had come out of subalterns I got to know, had come out of Sandhurst, regulars, and they were just about a year or so older than me. In fact, the friends, my best friends that I made were 3 or 4 years older than myself.
And did the company commanders and the senior captains give any idea of what they thought was likely to happen?
No, not really. I noticed on the, we got re-entrained, and we went off, and I noticed that the, I do remember this, the older ones being a little bit silent, rather than chattering subalterns around the place, because I think they, you know, they had an idea as to what was coming, probably. But they were more restrained. Well, they should be anyway, senior officers, but I mean, they they did seem a bit quiet. I remember one of them, whenever the train stopped, used to get out and get a crate of champagne and hand it out round the carriages, so wake people up rather surprised way with handing them a glass of champagne, which kept us all going, I suppose.
What about the soldiers? What was the mood in your platoon when they went off to France?
I just can't remember. I think it's something what they expected. I don't think there was any sort of surprise. They just took it in their stride, like these soldiers took most things. I don't think there was any sort of, we're all going to get, there was never any mention of people getting killed or wounded or anything like that. But then we never talked about that anyway, because it was something you tucked away in the back of your mind, really. It wasn't a good idea to go around talking. It's bad for morale to talk about it. So there was no question of people being killed or anything like that.
Presumably some of the soldiers and officers would have been in action of some sort in during the time in India.
Oh yes, and also in Palestine.
Yes. So I mean, the idea of death or injury wouldn't have been unfamiliar.
No. But I don't remember any of them telling us tales of what happened. I mean, when we're in the mess before the war, some of the senior ones used to talk about their times in India. Well, then we had a mess sergeant there called Sergeant Purser, I remember, who'd been there for years, and every night, and sometimes at nights, when he was sort of part of the mess, he'd been there so long.
A retainer.
Well, he was, yes, and his wife used to work down in the kitchens. And when senior officers started, some of the majors were talking about their times in India and so forth, you'd hear Sergeant Purser's voice from behind saying, excuse me, sir, that was Sidi Barani, and you were a captain then. Oh, was I, Sergeant Purser, yes. He was accepted totally as a member. And when he went off, he retired just before the war, and he was seen off with a silver salver and a cocktail party and all kinds of things. So that's the only time that I remember people talking about past experiences.
How long did your train journey up from Cherbourg take you?
Well, it took us to Brest, which we thought was in the wrong direction. But I can't remember. It didn't take all that amount of time. It seemed to chuff along fairly slowly and racketing along. I suppose it must have taken a full day anyway. I don't think we spent the night in the train. I remember we arrived in Brest, and we got out and we had to march up a steep hill there, I remember. And we all went into a disused either wine store, huge place, sort of warehouse, or a brewery, because it smelt of alcohol, which had been cleared for us. And I slept in there, everybody slept in there. And I can remember so well waking up in the morning and hearing the cookers going, so we're cooking early morning tea, what we used to call gunfire in those days. And then after a bit, I think we moved into a hotel for a couple of days. But I wasn't with the battalion very long. I got sent off on a job.
What was the job?
Well, I was sent for by the CO one day and told to detail 20 men from my platoon, plus the platoon sergeant, a couple of corporals, as I was going off for 48 hours to guard an ammunition train.
Oh.
So I was given cooking utensils, some food, and happily I got what...